Boy, that's cold. Refs turned into Ray Charles when we got the ball.
You are Locked On Fantasy Basketball, your daily podcast on fantasy basketball. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast brought to you by Basketball Monster. My name is Josh Lloyd and I am the lead fantasy analyst over at basketballmonster.com, and you can find me on Twitter as always at redrock_bball. We've got a fair bit to talk about in today's show. Of course, we're going to be recapping all of the games from Sunday, all four of those games. We're going to help you look ahead to set your lineup for week 14 for daily changes leagues. For weekly changes leagues, we're going to preview a big MLK Day 11 game slate in the NBA on Monday, and we're going to shine the player spotlight on an international rookie. So,
let's get to it.
Let us get to it indeed. We will start by looking at the week ahead, and it is week 14 in the NBA. And as I mentioned, we've got a very, very busy Monday to kick things off. 11 games on Monday for MLK Day. Of course, that's not a public holiday over here, but I know you guys are going to be enjoying basketball from very, very early on in the day. The first game tips off at around midday, I think, maybe, or half past 12 in the afternoon, Eastern time. So a very, very early start for you guys who do have that holiday off. You can watch basketball all day. So 11 games Monday, then we go down to Tuesday with 4 games, Wednesday with 10 games, Thursday with 4 games, Friday with 7, Saturday with 9, and Sunday with 4 games. So there's some pretty clear standout days in terms of streaming days for your daily changes leagues. We're looking at Tuesday. We're looking at Thursday. You can stream on Friday and on Sunday as well. You may even be able to get players in on Saturday, probably less likely on Monday, Wednesday. But if we're going to focus on Tuesday, Thursday, Friday, and Sunday for daily changes leagues, let's have a look how we can manipulate that schedule and get the most bang for your buck out of your weekly acquisitions by adding players on pseudo back-to-backs, on back-to-backs to try and get 2 games for the price of 1. So if we're going to use Tuesday, Thursday, Friday, Sunday as our streaming days, the teams that play on Tuesday and Thursday on that pseudo back-to-back, we've got Boston, Minnesota, Portland, and Orlando. So the fringe guys from those teams, so Minnesota, you're looking at a Gorgui Dieng, maybe even a Tyus Jones, probably not. Portland, you're looking at Evan Turner, maybe you're looking at Eddie Davis or Zach Collins, Shabazz Napier, Pat Connaughton, who had a big game today. For Boston, who are now back from London, you're looking at guys like Aaron Baines, Vanilla Tice, Marcus Morris might be available. In Orlando, we're talking about a guy like Bismack Biyombo, if he's not already owned. John Simmons, the same story there. Maybe you could take a flyer on a player like DJ Augustine, or maybe you look at Mario Hezonja across that Tuesday-Thursday combination. Thursday, Friday, back-to-back, there's only one team that has that, and that's the Indiana Pacers. Domantas Sabonis should already be owned, with Miles Turner already ruled out for Monday's action, but he would be a guy that you'd want to be adding there. You could look at Corey Joseph. You could look at Lance Stevenson on that back-to-back. They'd both have some value in that spot there also. And Bojan Bogdanovic, if he isn't owned, he's a guy you can grab. Friday, Sunday, we've got a bunch of teams who have that pseudo back-to-back to end the week. We've got the Spurs, the Pistons, the Knicks, the Lakers, the Pacers, and the Nets. So Indiana, obviously, with that great end to the week. So on starting Thursday, they have 3 games in 4 nights, and those 3 games are all on low volume days. So those players that I mentioned, you can get 3 games for the price of 1. San Antonio, we know the guys we're looking at, maybe a DeJounte Murray, we're looking at Kyle Anderson, you're looking at Davis Bertans if he need threes. For Detroit, Ish Smith, if he's not already owned, you could look at Reggie Bullock, maybe Dwight Bikes in a deeper sort of format. The Knicks, we're talking Jarrett Jack, who we'll talk about a little bit later on. You're talking about maybe a Lance Thomas, Mick Beasley, whose value has cooled off quite a bit. For the Lakers, it's Larry Nance, it's guys like Julius Randle, if they haven't been scooped up, which in most cases they would have, of course. Josh the Hitman Hart there as well. And then for Brooklyn, we're looking at other guys like the Blue Swimmer, Alan Crabb. We're potentially looking at someone like Jumpin' Joe Harris. You might look at Quincy Acey if you need some big man numbers, or you take a flyer on a guy like Jahlil Okafor, which is not something that I generally recommend in most cases. But that's sort of the way to approach the week ahead. For weekly leagues, We want to look at which teams play the most games, and there's a bunch of teams that play four games. The majority play three, but there's still quite a few playing four. We've got the Nets, the Pistons, the Pacers, the Lakers, the Grizzlies, the Heat, the Knicks, the Spurs, the Raptors, and the Jazz all play four games this week. On the three-game side of things, it's the Hawks, the Celtics, the Hornets, Bulls, Cavs, Nuggets, Warriors, Rockets, Clippers, Bucks, Wolves, Pelicans, Thunder, Magic, Sixers, Blazers, Kings, and Wizards. And then you've got two teams who play just the two games, and that's the Dallas Mavericks and the Phoenix Suns. And in standard leagues, there's nobody on Dallas that you're going to want to start. And in Phoenix, you might be looking at Devin Booker, and you might be able to get something out of him. But in most cases, you're probably not going to be able to use any player from either of these teams in the majority of standard leagues. You'd probably be looking at 14-team leagues to consider Booker, and 16 to 18-team leagues to consider Harrison Barnes or Dennis Smith on the Mavericks. So those guys all lose a ton of value for this week. If you want to look at most of your lineup decisions are going to be between guys that play three games. So the Thunder and the Celtics have the better schedule of the week. The Thunder take on the Kings. They have the Lakers and the Cavs, so some great matchups there. The problem with a lot of those guys is you can't really stream players in from the Thunder because there's not much around. But if you're looking at a decision between, say, a Steven Adams on the Thunder or maybe you're looking at Dwight Howard on the Hornets, yeah, Adams has got by far the more favorable schedule with the Hawks playing against the Pistons, Wizards, and Heat, which do slow things down a bit and can make things a little bit tougher. The Hawks and the Kings both have the worst schedule, with the Kings having the worst one of the lot. The Thunder, the Jazz, and the Grizzlies is their three-game week. The Grizzlies, out of the four-game teams, have the best way to do it. Now, I probably should have touched on this earlier, but when we talk about three games in four nights, there's a few other teams I want to talk about. Talked about the Pacers already. Starting Tuesday, the Nuggets have three games in four nights. This is for daily changes leagues. And on Wednesday, you've got the Grizzlies, the Heat, the Jazz, and the Raptors. They all start a three-game in four-night stretch of action. So check that out, and that will be ways that you can help set your lineups for weekly leagues and organize your stream strategy. Matt's got all the stuff written on his weekly schedule analysis over on Basketball Monster, and we've got the schedule analyzer over there, and you can take advantage of our weekly projections tool as well to help you set your lineups and work out your stream abilities and where you need to focus your energies in terms of streaming this week. Now what we're going to do is we're going to look at three teams who I'm not going to talk about in either the recap or the preview portion of the show. Another team that we're not going to talk about in either portion of that is the Sixers, but they didn't play a game over the weekend, so really nothing to recap from them since the last time we spoke. The Magic, there's not a massive amount to talk about with them, but what we did see on the weekend is, prior to the weekend, we said Lord Alfred Payton and John Simmons both have their minutes down pretty low, and Simmons at about 20, 21 minutes, and Payton at 23, 24. Both those guys played 30 on the weekend against the Wizards and put up pretty significant lines, so that's good news. I still don't believe in Simmons as a must-own 12-team league guy, whereas I do for Payton. Of course, you know my thoughts on him. The Dallas Mavericks, with Yogi Ferrell starting, Dennis Smith is playing a lot more minutes at point guard because they're not getting Ferrell in there as the backup. Maxi Kleber is basically eliminated from the rotation at the moment. So this is really strengthening my case for Dennis Smith having a strong second half of the season. I do have my doubts whether Seth Curry comes back at all this year. He could. I just have my considerable doubts there. As for Ferrell, big minutes for him, at least until Curry returns. And for now, he does have that 12-team league value, although it likely will be fleeting until... If Seth comes back. The Denver Nuggets, just a putrid showing for them over the weekend against the Spurs. I just really despise this Plumlee-Jokic lineup. There's absolutely no need for it. Yeah, we know Jokic is a center. We know he's the best center on the team. We know he's one of the best centers in the NBA. So why would you play him out of position? Dr. Malone, it's just bullshit. It's ridiculous. The team's struggling, but I blame so much of it on Malone, just changing offensive game styles, trying this bullshit. Look, you've got plenty of players who can play there at the four. Man, throw Karen Fareed there. I know I don't like him as a player, but him and Jokic, they work well together. Throw Trey Lyles there. That works really well with Jokic. Throw Babyneck there and spread things out and bring Wancho into the mix. Put Fart and Will Barton at small four. There are lots of different things. Man, put Torrey Craig out there for more minutes. There are a lot of things that Malone can do, and I think at some point it's gonna get to breaking point because Plumlee Jokic, it just isn't working, and it does need to change. So if you are looking at a buy-low opportunity, you might be able to do that on Jokic, because when he comes back to being the starting center, we're getting back to top 10, top 12 type of numbers, which he's not providing at the moment, where he's playing out of position, and the offense just looks completely discombobulated, which, again, is just a Malone standard. Just when everything's looking good, he's got to do something. He's got to put his dick in the mix to try and muck it up, and that's exactly what's happened so far in Denver. So we'll see what happens with that over the coming games. But I do feel that a change is going to be coming pretty soon for those Nuggets based on gut and the fact that they're getting their asses kicked on a semi-regular basis. The monstrous line of the night, you know who it is. It's old Mr. Softy himself, Anthony Davis, 48-17 with 2 threes, 4 steals, 3 blocks, 17 of 30 from the field and 12 of 15 from the line. Of course, I am being entirely facetious when I call him Mr. Softy because that is the biggest load of shit that I have heard. This, you know, injury-prone talk and this soft talk, it's just a load of shit. I say it all the time. People are injury-prone. We know that. One of the big reasons that was touted, oh, let's draft Damian Lillard, he's so durable. He's missed more games than Davis this year. People are injury-prone until they're not injury-prone. People are Iron Men until they're not. And these things change at the drop of a hat at any time. And it's just, it's so much of it's narrative-based. Jimmy Butler's got the narrative of this Iron Man. He's missed a ton of games over the past 3 years. I don't understand. I know that he pisses people off in DFS because he leaves games early and all that, but this guy is playing 36 minutes a night. He's played 36 games this season. He played 75 games last season at 36 minutes a night. Yeah, it's a ton of minutes. He's played over 2,000 minutes in all four of his NBA seasons, topping out at over 2,700 last year. He plays a lot. He heals fast. Yes, he might get these occasional niggles that really do annoy you, and we've seen that plenty of times, and it's going to be a constant issue, but he heals fast. He gets back in. He plays big minutes, and he's really bloody good. He's the number one ranked player over the last 2 weeks in 8 category leagues. He's number 2 over the last month in that time frame, averaging 30-10 with a 3, 1.6 assists, 1.3 steals, 2.5 blocks on brilliant percentages of 56 and 87. They are massive, massive numbers for Davis. He's the 5th ranked guy over the course of the season. The presence of DeMarcus Cousins has done absolutely zero to reduce his impact at all. He's averaging just 1.3 points fewer than last season, 1.5 rebounds less, but he's shooting just incredibly more efficiently, taking his true shooting from 58 up to 64% because he's at 57% from the field, which is a career-high number for Anthony Davis. He is an elite fantasy talent. Yes, yeah, I understand that those injury concerns, but he's not someone that I ever shy away from drafting. You've heard me talk about that time and time again. I've drafted him this season. I've drafted him in plenty of other seasons. I've got him in dynasty leagues where I was able to get him pretty late in that dynasty league that I drafted. I think pick 9 it was. I was pretty happy to get him in that. No, that was last season. And look, there are going to be bumps along the way, but that can happen with any player, literally anyone, but no one gets the amount of shit that Anthony Davis does. And I am firmly in his corner, and I'm sure he is very, very fully appreciative of me sticking up for him, because that's exactly what he needs when he makes $25 million a season, or $24 million a season. He's really happy that a random bloke from Melbourne is defending his honour. The waiver wire line of the night, I don't know what the hell's going on here. Jarrett Jack, 22-4-8, 2 triples, 3 steals, 9 of 14 from the field, 2 of 2 from the line. He is the 66th ranked player over the last 2 weeks and inside the top 100 over the last month. There is absolutely no reason why he should be playing 29 minutes a night. He has played at least 34 minutes in the past 3 games, and the numbers are fine, but it doesn't mean that he's doing things well. He still is a horrendous crunch time player. The shooting is weird, but he has hit in his last 4 games, and this is something that we know is going to drop. He's shooting over 58% in all 4 of those past 4 games. And he is at least 60% in 3 of them. Just crazy numbers from Jack. Big assists as well. 8-10, 8-8 in those games. Getting steals in 3 of the 4 games. At this point, you do have to grab him. I don't know how long it's going to last. I know that Jeff Hornacek is a bad coach, and the way that they're really minimizing Nil Aquino is incredibly frustrating. But with the Knicks, I guess, still pushing for playoff position, Jack is going to continue to get some pretty decent run, and I believe he does need to be owned at least now in the short term. I don't think that... let's rephrase that. I know that the shooting's not going to continue for Jarrett Jack. The assists could. The scoring and the percentage will drop. There's zero doubt about that. But it's been an improbable run. In fact, over the last week, in those last 3 games, he's the 14th ranked player. What on earth? 18.7, 5 rebounds, 8.7 assists, 2 steals, 1.3 triples on 62% shooting. Those are numbers which of course we know that he's not going to be able to continue, but he does get the honour of the waiver wire line of the night, so that's akin to NBA Player of the Week, so he can go and get that framed and put it up on his mantelpiece. I'm sure I'll send him a printout of the graphics. The young gun of the night goes to Joshie Jackson of the Phoenix Suns. Jackson, who missed the last game with a hip complaint, he was in, he was starting with TJ Warren out, and he scored 21. He had 2 triples, 6 rebounds, 3 assists, and went 7 of 16 from the field and hit all 5 of his free throws. He has been significantly improved lately. Remember, not that long ago, he received a DNP CD. That was on the 2nd of January. In the 4 games since then, he's the 94th ranked player in 27 minutes a night, averaging 16, 6, and 3. 2 triples, half a steal, 47 and 73, shooting 48% from 3. So those 3-point percentage is pretty high, but over his last 12, he's at 39%. It shows you how piss poor he was to begin the season, because over the course of the year, he's at 27% from 3. But getting the shots fixed and getting his shot selection fixed, which is still was a problem in this game, but it's something that has been an issue for him. If he can reel that sort of wildness in, then he can be a valuable player, because he can get steals, he can get blocks, he can get assists, he can rebound, and he can score. I'm not thinking that he is a must-own guy at this point. Obviously, the extra minutes he got in this game were to do with TJ Warren's absence. But in a 14-team league, I'd be making a grab and just seeing how it plays out for Jackson. But recently, he's seen his usage go up to 25% over those last 4 games, the true shooting up to 56% above league average, and putting in some work getting the assists, things that he'd all struggled with prior to this little run. It's only been 4 games, so we're not going to get overly excited about it. But in a 14-team league, he's worth having a look at. He's a guy that's going to play some 2, some 3, and be able to get at least mid-20s in minutes. But I'd expect the efficiency to drop back a bit, and maybe some of that playmaking can. But you know what? That was one of the strengths of his coming into the league, was his ability to pass. And it's taken a while to appear, but now we've seen it. Maybe there is a chance of it sticking. So it's something for us to pay a level of attention to, and see exactly how this all works out for Joshie Jackson. But it was obviously a pretty impressive performance from him in these recent games. And that 3-point shooting is something that we hope can stick. So it is going to provide a lot more value for him, for the Suns, and for fantasy teams as we move forward. So Joshie Jackson is your young gun of the night. The dud of the night. I tell a man's not hot. Yeah, it goes to Eric Bledsoe, Josh Jackson's former teammate. Wasn't a great night for Bledsoe. 10-3-4 with a steal on just putrid 4 of 16 shooting, 2 of 3 from the line. He's still the 35th ranked player over the last month, 41st over the season, averaging 2 steals per game. Only 4 assists, which is definitely a part to do with the fact that he's playing next to Giannis in Milwaukee, but 18 points, 1.63, shooting 48, 78, and 32 over the last 16 games. He's strong. It was just a poor game. Not a huge amount to read into. I think he can be a top 35 guy, top 30 guy potentially the rest of the way, and finish as a top 30 guy for top 35 guy for the rest of the season. So he's been strong. Nothing for me to suggest that much is going to change. His numbers have dipped just a little over the last 2 weeks, with his scoring down to just 16 points in that time frame. But no cause for alarm there. He'll be fine. This is just a shitful performance from him, and things will be better as we move forward. Now, I'm going to go on to question time, where you guys submit a question. It could be basketball-related, it could be not. And today's question comes from Savannah. Is Savannah or Savannah? I'm going to go with Savannah, who's on Twitter, at SavvyGFM. Savannah's question is, as an American who enjoys Chris Lilley shows, which one is your favorite? Now, Chris Lilley, if you aren't aware who that is, that's an Australian comedian who's done a whole bunch of shows, mockumentary-style shows, where he plays a multitude of characters. So he plays teenage white boys. He plays a Tongan teenager. He plays a 60-year-old grandma. He plays a 17-year-old schoolgirl. He plays a bunch of different characters. He plays a 50-year-old camp teacher. A whole bunch of different characters that he plays in these shows, going across age, race, gender, all that sort of stuff, and playing multiple characters at the same time in the show. The shows that he has done, you've got Angry Boys, We Can Be Heroes, Jermaine, Jonah from Tonga and Summer Heights High. To me, now I wouldn't say I'm a huge Chris Lilly fan just because he's Australian. I wouldn't say that I'd necessarily gravitate to him, but I have seen the majority of his shows. And my favorite show would be Angry Boys at this point. I still haven't watched Jermaine. I think it's Jermaine Private Schoolgirl is what it's called, but I do encourage you guys to watch at least one of them and see how it goes and get a mild insight into some level of Australian humour, but it is relatively popular over here. It's been around for the last 9 to 10 years, some of these shows, but Angry Boys, I would say Savannah is my favourite of the Chris. You didn't tell me which one your favourite was, so you can get back to me and let me know what your favourite was, or anyone who has watched any of these Chris Lilly shows, whether that's from Australia or outside of Australia, whether you enjoy it or which one was your favourite. But that is today's question of the day, just to break up the basketballness of today's show. All right, let's move on now to talk about these games in a little bit more detail. There were 4 games on Sunday. There were some absolute stinkers involved there. And the first one was one of those. The Milwaukee Bucks got hammered by the Miami Heat. 97-79. Yanni, 31 minutes, 22-6. While Brogo played 34 minutes. His minutes just continue to go up, which is something as fantasy owners we're really keen on. It just makes it even more weird and curious, the fact that he was playing 23 minutes a night before, and then that one game where he just didn't come off the bench at all in the first half until 2 minutes remaining, and then played the entire second half. Kid's rotations, there's literally no plan into anything he does. But Brogdon now is pretty secure in what he's doing, 15-5. We've seen Tone Snell's minutes disappear. 3 points in 21 minutes for him, as Sterling Brown starts coming for some of those now, as well as Brogo. 22 minutes for Sterling, 3-5 with a steal. You've heard me talk about Sterlo a couple of times. He is a guy that can get steals, he can hit threes, he can get some rebounds and assists, and he could be an interesting fantasy guy. For now, he's just a very deep league guy, but he's taken away, yes, I guess, the upside of the sexy boy Sean Kilpatrick. He's taken away some of Jason Terry's minutes. He's taken away any hope of Rashad Vaughn, although it is Kidd. And I'm undoubtedly, in the next 2 weeks, we'll see one 20-minute Rashad Vaughn game completely out of nowhere. Chrissy Middleton had 16-6, and the Muppet John Henson had 4-9 in his 25 minutes. I still think that Henson is a 12-team league guy, but he's really going to fit specific teams rather than as a must-own guy. Onto the Heat, Hassan Whiteside is a big line, 15-10, 2 steals and 4 blocks, but still just 25 minutes. I think we can almost rule out any chance of Whiteside being a 33 to 34 minute per game guy the rest of this season, but that's still really productive in that time. Bam Adebayo actually closed this game out over Olynyk, over Whiteside, 6-4-6 for Adebayo in his 28 minutes. Now, the minutes are nice, yeah, more minutes than any of those three centers there. But he's not a prolific producer of stats so that I would be looking at him to say, oh, yeah, I'm grabbing him in 12-team leagues or anything like that. But it is impressive. It's someone to watch. It's more of a deeper league ad. As for Olynyk, he was putting together some big, big numbers when Whiteside was out. But now, just 18 minutes, 7-7 with a steal, he can be moved on from in any standard formats. Joshy Richardson, 16-6, 2 threes, a steal, and a block. And I probably should mention it that Deion Waiters is now out for the rest of the season with that ankle surgery. So that bumps Tyler Johnson. It bumps the Duke, Wayne Ellington, into must-own territory, especially Johnson. Ellington, more of a specialist for threes. And of course, Josh Richardson is a must-own guy, but still bafflingly low in terms of his ownership. Tyler had 14-6. The Iron Shoulder, Goran Dragic, had 25-3-2 with 4 triples. And Justice Winslow made his return, played 13 minutes, had 3, 4, and 4. I don't think that Winslow's getting anywhere near 30 minutes. I think he will struggle to get over 20 minutes a night, given how well this team's playing. You'd have to cut Adebayo out, you'd have to cut Olynyk out, or you'd have to cut the Duke out, really, to get him to big minutes or cut their playing time. And I'm not sure that Spoelstra wants to do that to give it to Winslow, who has struggled in larger roles. So I think he's going to settle in at an 18 to 20 minute level, which is not going to be enough for the majority of fantasy leagues. Next game, the New Orleans Pelicans and the New York Knicks. The only game of today that was really close. Overtime game. Jrue Holiday continues to be really good. 31-5-4, 4 steals, a block, 63% shooting. He's been awesome. While Boogie had 15-16-5, but a combined 10 steals and blocks, 7 steals, 3 blocks. Just a real shit show with his percentages as he went 4 of 16 from the field and struggled on his free throws as well, hitting just 58% of them, which equates out to 7 of 12. Etuan Moore, 16 points in 45 minutes. He's getting a lot of minutes, but he is not a 12-team league guy, in my opinion. Well, Rajon Rondo, he's getting close to not being one of those either. 24 minutes in overtime game. He's had the occasional 30-minute game sprinkled in there. I think Elvin Gentry is just realizing something that I've known for 3-4 years. Rajan Rondo's just not that good. 4-4-5 in 24 minutes with a steal. Now, I had definitely had my doubts as to whether Gentry would limit his minutes, but it's appearing to be the case. We're seeing more. That didn't mean to say it that way. With Drew Holiday playing at the point, we're seeing more Ian Clark, who had 5-3-3 in his 25 minutes. And Rondo's just not able to cut it out there most of the time. So in a 10-team league, I reckon you could probably move on from Rajon. In a 12-team league, it's getting pretty dicey. But I think in a lot of those cases, you can move on as well. Just things don't seem rosy for him. Now, he'll come out and probably have a 30-minute game and go 12-4-8. And you go, shit, that's pretty good. But intersplice it with all the other numbers that he's put up, and it just doesn't cut the mustard. It's just not to the right level. Dante Cunningham also only played 11 minutes because he is hashtag not good. For the New York Knicks,
was there just
25-6, 3 assists, 5 steals, 2 blocks. Really, really big performance from him. Already spoke about Jarrett Jack, and Enes Kanter played 36 minutes. Now, some of that is because of the big lineups of the Pelicans. But remember that stage where, after Christmas, where he had a 36-22 game, where Hornacek just said, oh, mate, you were awesome, but now from now on, we're playing you 17 minutes a night? Nothing there made any sense, and his minutes have crept up slowly again, back to the 24-25 mark, and the 36 here would be music to his owner's ears, 18-10 with 2 blocks. I don't think we should be expecting this, but I don't think we're going to get back to a state where he's playing the 17 a night. Timmy Hardaway, 33 minutes for him, 25 points, 5 rebounds, 3 assists, 3 steals, and 2 triples. Now, the Knicks do have a back-to-back. They play again on Monday, and Hardaway was limping at the end of the game, so it's something for us to keep an eye on to see whether he actually plays. But his return has basically eliminated Michael Beasley, who played only 9 minutes and had 0 points. I thought that Beasley would really, really suffer when Hardaway came back. I didn't think he would suffer this much, where he goes scoreless in just 9 minutes. Lance Thomas is playing more minutes now that Hardaway is back, as they require someone to focus more on defense. He had 7 points in 26 minutes, while Dougie McDirt had 8 points and 2 triples in his 12 minutes of playing time. As for Frankie Ntilikina, 16 minutes, scoreless, 4 rebounds, 3 assists. I do have high hopes for him. I just don't think it's going to come to fruition at this point, given the way that Hornacek is running things. Every time it looks like he's pushing towards a consistent 28-29-minute role, and he plays well in those roles, we get back to 34 minutes of Jarrett Jack. So I think if you are holding Ntilikina in any 12-team leagues, it would be the right move to move on. The Indiana Pacers and the Phoenix Suns, just an absolute ass-kicking here by the Pacers, 120-97. Oladipo played 21 minutes, and that might piss you off, but he still had 17-5-1 with 4 steals in that time. Corey Joseph got some extra run, 32 minutes, 16-1-6, and Domantas Sabonis did play. He entered the game questionable with Miles Turner out, but he played 24 minutes and had 4-14. We were able to see 23 minutes of TJ Leaf, 19 minutes of Al Jefferson. We got 5 minutes of Ike Anabogu as well, as the Pacers emptied the bench, 18 minutes of Joe Young. So very, very little to take away from this game from a Pacers point of view, just because of the ass-kicking that they did give to Phoenix. On to the Suns, Greg Monro with an unscheduled appearance. 3 minutes for Greggy in a game that Tyson Chandler played. I have no idea why they went to that. He had 1 assist in that time. He is not worthy of 12-teamers, 10-teamers, 14-teamers, 16-teamers, maybe in a dynasty league, but he is not a guy I would hold. As for Chandler, he had 14 boards in 26 minutes, and Alex Len, whose minutes had been cut recently, saw them climb back up to 19. 12-10 in this one. I wouldn't be holding onto him out of hopes of him getting this solid 27-minute role. Isaiah Cannon returned and cut into Tyler Ulis' playing time. Neither of those guys are 12-team league guys. Well, Davon Reed. I think Davon Reed. This is his first appearance in his career. He had that meniscus tear to start the season. He is back. 5 minutes for Davon. 1 rebound there. Missed both his shots. He's going to be just a deeper league sort of guy, but with not much happening in the guard department, if they want to play more Devin Booker at point guard, we might see Reed push himself into a 12-14-minute-a-game role and be a useful player for 20-team leagues. Dragan Bender wasn't a great performance from him. He had 2 strong ones in a row, 30 minutes, 0 points, 5 rebounds, not much else. This is when I talk about him being not an elite fantasy prospect, but I like his real on-court play. This is part of the reason. The Suns play just 2 games this coming week. Marquise Chris is likely back for Tuesday's action, so Bender's value is not there for 12s, and it's probably not there for 14-team leagues either. The last game of the night, another blowout. The Blazers and the Timberwolves. Dame Lillard, 21-6-8. That's great. McCollum, 18 points in 26 minutes. And just a whole bunch of shittiness for the rest of the team. Paddy Connaughton played 29 minutes. He had 18 points with four triples as he got extra run in the blowout. Yusuf Nurkic, just 20 minutes. Zach Collins played 29. You know, I really like Collins. I don't think he's going to have a huge impact this season, but I do like him moving forward. And Yusuf Nurkic, restricted free agency, is coming up this offseason. It's going to be super interesting to see what the Blazers do with him, because he hasn't played anywhere near as well as last season. His role has not been as large, and they did just draft two big men in Swanigan and Collins, and they're seeing a little bit more of Collins here at center. My man, Al-Farouq Aminu.
Sometimes it may be good, sometimes it may be shit.
Yep, he was shit in this one. 21 minutes, 6-7, not a 12-team standard guy. On to the Wolves. Jim Butler started off slowly, but ended with 24, 5, and 4, and two steals. And normally I'd be pissed when I see Jeff Teague.
My name is Jeff.
Take the most shots on the team, and I'm a little bit pissed. He took 15, while Wiggins, Towns, Gibson, and Butler all had 11, but he played well. 22, 1, and 8 with two steals for Teague in just 29 minutes, while Towns, he had 20 and 11. Wigo had 17 and 4 with two steals, so a strong night from him. Still, the free throws, man, they're just not going to get fixed this season. It's just a consistent problem. He was 1 of 2 from the line, while Taj had 12 and 5. The bench was able to be emptied, and we even saw 4 minutes of Shabazz Muhammad, or they should call him Baz. Not much to see there, of course. Just a really not ideal day in the NBA in terms of competitiveness, at least. All right, that brings us to the end of looking at the action from Sunday, of previewing the week ahead. Now I'm going to take a quick break, and then we're going to come back, and we're going to shine the player spotlight, as I said, on an international rookie, a player with plenty of European experience who now is a rookie in the NBA. And then we're going to preview the big Martin Luther King Day slate of games, 11 games in the NBA. I am going to give you today a song to take you to the break by Hot Potato Band, and that song is called Little Bird, and then I'll be back to preview the games for DFS.
So you can feel better. Say the word and we can fly away. But we can only help you with the letters. Ooh, you can't stop this jam, even if you wanted to. And if you hate it, pack your bag and go back to school. Our sorrows for another day. Cause we're playing this song so you can feel better. Yeah. Say the word and we can fly away.
Alright, guys, we're back, and let's go ahead and shine that player spotlight brightness over to the state of California. We're looking at an international guard who has been playing in Europe for quite a few years and now is in his first year in the NBA. I know there are two options here of who it could be, but today's one is Bogdan Bogdanović, BB8 of the Sacramento Kings. Bogdan, you know I'm a huge fan of Bogdanović. I think that he is the best player on the Sacramento Kings as they are currently constructed. I put this out the other day and someone said, really? What about De'Aaron Fox? Like, no, Bogdanović is significantly better than Fox. I'm not saying that Fox won't become better than Bogdan at some point, but for now, Bogdan is quite comfortably the better player. I could say there's a challenge between him and George Hill, but with the way that Hill's played this season, To me, it's Bogdanović. Now, for fantasy, if you look at his season numbers, he's the 127th ranked player in 26 minutes per game, averaging 11, 2.5 and 2.9, 1.5 threes, 0.9 steals, shooting 48, 82 and 39 from three. But let's drill it down a little bit to where Dave Yeager started realizing, you know what, shit, this guy is our best player, and let's play him a little bit more. Over the last month, he's 89th in 29 minutes. Over the last 2 weeks, he's 74th in 30 minutes. In those last six games, averaging 15, 3 and 4.5, 1.3 threes, half a steal, shooting 55 and 90 with 50% from three. Now, obviously, that's a little bit high with the shooting, but when you compare what he's done for the year at a true shooting of 59, we understand that he is an efficient shooter. He can get steals. He's averaging 4 assists per game over the last month as his team's possibly his team's best passer or best initiator. He can shoot. He's possibly their best shooter as well. He can do so many different things, and he is quite a good defender. It doesn't really reflect significantly in big steal numbers or big block numbers, but he's not a bad defender. He is a guy that I believe is a must-own player across all 12-team leagues and in 10-team leagues. And this is not a guy who's really, really old. He is 25, so he's basically heading into his prime. I think next season we're going to see him be a guy that's probably going to be around a top 60, top 65 type of player, depending on a few things, the coach, the direction of the franchise, the draft, all that sort of stuff. But he should be a guy who is a player that they look to build the current term around. With these young guys here, he's a guy that, you know, in 4 years' time, he'll be 29, because I can add 25 and 4, and that's how I get to 29. But with these, then you've got the other guys like Fox, who then becomes 24 years old, and Cauley Stein, who's then 26, 27, and you got Heald, who's probably 84 at that time. No, he's not. I think Heald's going to be 28 at that time, around the same age as Bogdanović. You've got Justin Jackson, who then becomes 23, 24, around that sort of age range, or actually 25, around that age range as well. When all these guys are maturing, Bogdan will be right at in the middle to the end of his prime. So it can be a huge part of what this team can do. If we have a look at his advanced numbers for this season, he's putting up just about an average PER, 14.5. He's still a negative in box score plus minus, a below average win shares per 48. So he does have room to improve. And the Kings are actually marginally better with him on the bench, 1.1 points. It's a marginal difference there. So he's got some room to improve in many of those stats. But I do think that a lot of that is set off by the way that he played to begin the season. Obviously, the quality of teammates isn't ideal, or some of the lineups that he is playing with. But this is a guy that throughout his time in Europe put up some very, very impressive numbers for multiple seasons. A guy that was a 40% three-point shooter for many years in Europe. Just last year, he was 40% he shot in Europe there, 43, 39. Really strong three-point shooter in his time in Europe. Handled the ball a lot and got quite a few assists over there. And we're seeing that come to the fore now. Averaged 4.2 assists last season, 3 assists the year before. He can get a steal a game. He is quite an impressive player. We've seen him got the balls to take on many different situations. Last-second shots, running offenses, all that sort of stuff we're seeing from Bogdanović. He was a high-usage player over in Europe. Good PER numbers, highly efficient true shooting. And we're seeing all that stuff again come to the fore with him over this last month to 6 weeks, where he's really showing what he can do. Now, I've been quite critical of Dave Yeager pretty much all season. He's a guy that has been up and down with his rotations. But one thing we've seen is that Bogdanović's minutes have been fairly consistent. If we look past his last month of action or so, if we go back to the middle of December, so if we go all the way back to the 10th of December, his minutes, 30, 33, 33, 29, 18, random. And that was a start as well. That was Dave Yeager just getting funky. 33, 29, 29, 31, 30, 28, 24, 33, 33, 32, 31, 26. So really consistent-ish minutes with the occasional Dave Yeager dickery thrown in there. So we can feel a decent level of confidence. He scored in double digits in 6 consecutive games. He's had at least 5 assists in 4 of his last 6 games. Actually, 5 of his last 7 games, at least 5 assists. So there's some nice numbers there. The steals have been a little bit lacking for him recently, but this is something where I believe he can improve there, so he can start to get those steal numbers going. And, I'm super high on him. I don't know if he'll ever become a top 40 fantasy guy. I think top 50 is probably the ceiling, but I reckon he can have multiple top 100 seasons in between that 60 to 85 range. and should have a realistic chance of finishing this season at least inside the top 100, and from here on out being a guy who's a top 80 type of prospect. So Bogdan Bogdanovic, a guy that I'm big on, and I believe he is a must-own right across the fantasy landscape. Let's talk about the perfect DFS lineups from Sunday on FanDuel. Just a complete shit show of a lineup. Jarrett Jack at 42.8, Corey Joseph at 29.2, Drew Holiday 54, Timmy Hardaway Jr. 41.5, Lance Thomas in the perfect lineup with 18.7 points. Yeah. Joshie Jackson 30.7, Tone Davis 85.4, Kristaps Porzingis 54.7, and Boog at 66.7 for a total of 423.7, and that cost $59,300. On DraftKings, they didn't have Holgate Day slate, so I'm going to use the main slate here, which is just the last two games. Corey Joseph 29.25, Jim Butler 40.75, Joshie Jackson 33, Al Jefferson 24.25, Townsie at 40.25, Lillard at 40.5, Alex Len 32, and Jeff Teague.
My name is Jeff.
At 38.75 for a total of 278.75, and that cost $48,200. Let's get into this MLK Day slate. As I said, games start early, so be really, really careful about your DFS contests and what you're entering. Going for a whole day slate is dangerous, especially when there are so many questionables later in the day. Lonzo Ball, Brandon Ingram, DeAndre Jordan, all guys that we need to pay some level or a significant level of attention to in those later games. So you're better off playing early slates and later slates and splitting it up that way rather than going across the whole day, because those absences or potential absences could have a real impact on how your lineup goes. The Pistons against the Hornets, they are favored by 3 and the total is 205 points. The injury concern we need to look at here is Stan Johnson. He is questionable. If he is out, get more minutes for Luki Kennard and for Reggie Bullock. Bullock is more of a GPP guy, because if his shot doesn't fall, then there's very little else that he is producing, and we've seen that over recent times. At point guard in this one, Ish Smith's at 6,700. It's just too expensive for me. The matchup recently, the Pistons have been a little bit more lax against opposition point guards. The Hornets have been lax against opposition point guards. 6,700 for Ish. Look, I don't think his upside's really high enough to demand that sort of a price, so he's not a strong option. Kemba at 7,700. That's really interesting. He's got a great record against the Pistons, averaging 45 the last three times they have played. That's a big price dip for Kemba, so I am invested in that. I think that's a really good spot to get involved with Kemba Walker. Shooting guards, Nick Batum, 5,400, averaging just the 21 over the last five. So there's a little bit of tournament upside there for Batum, but I'm not really feeling super strongly about it. Well, Jeza Lamb at 4,800, struggling to get that to value either, so he's somewhat of a fade. Avery Bradley, they've bumped him to 5,900 based on the fact that his last three games have been good. He had 36 in that last game and averaging 32.5 over the previous three. The Hornets are really tough for opposition shooting guards, and they have one of the toughest teams over the last couple of weeks to go up against. I'm not ready to lock Bradley in cash. He is more of a tournament guy. Kennard and Trevion Graham, other shooting guards on the slate here, not guys that I'm super interested in. Dwight Bikes is another guy who I should have talked about with point guards. 3,700. He's averaging 8 or 19 points over his last five, and at 3,700, that's pretty bloody good. He's taking some minutes away from Ish Smith. He's removed Langston Galloway from the equation completely. If you are looking for a cheaper point guard to go and get your Russes in or your LeBrons in, you might be able to put Bikes in there, get 20 points out of it, and have a level of reliability, I guess, that you might not have expected out of a guy like Dwight Bikes. At small forward, there's very little to look at. Reggie Bullock at 4,400, I'm not super interested. Kid Gilchrist, no. Stan Johnson, of course not. At power forward, let's look at Frank the Tank, 4,400. He has got the ability to give you a 30 or a 35 pointer, but with Marvin Williams resurging lately, it is tough to get too much behind Frank. As for Toby Harris, 6,700, has had a good record against Charlotte, played quite well against them over the recent journey. I think he's a decent cash option here. I don't mind using him. While Marvin Williams at 4,700, the numbers for him have been much improved, and I actually feel not too bad about using him, considering that his price is fairly low and the matchups tilted a little bit in his favour. At centre, it's Dwight Howard, and if he wasn't 8,700, I'd feel pretty good, but he has struggled in the past against Andre Drummond. I believe there was an ejection somewhere in those last couple of games for Dwight as well. 8,700 for him. I think it's too expensive. Maybe in a tournament, that's about it. Whereas Drummond at 10,500, I know that is too expensive. Now, his recent games have been good. 54-point average over the last three games, and that's fine at 10.5. I just don't imagine he'll be getting near that against Dwight Howard and this Charlotte Hornets team. On DraftKings, they don't have this game in their slate, so I'm not going to be including that as we go through it, of course. The next game we look at, the Toronto Raptors and the Philadelphia 76ers. Kyle Lowry is questionable with that tailbone that's caused him to miss the last couple of games. Amir Johnson is questionable with an illness, while I don't think we should be expecting Markelle Fultz. We've seen some videos of him returning, looks healthy, and the shot still looks really weird. And Brett Brown's quote today is like, what does Markelle have to do to be able to get back into games? And Brett said he needs to be able to shoot. So that is far from a ringing endorsement from your coach. Some of the shots just look horrendous. Some of them look fine, but man, if your shooting form is that inconsistent, there's a lot of work to go here with Fultz. I don't think we should be expecting him to play here or at any time in the next week would be my estimation. At point guard, if Lowry is unable to go, we're going to have DeLon Wright and Freddie VanVleet come into the consideration. DeLon's at 4,600. VanVleet has jumped all the way up to 5,000 on the back of his last two games. I don't love that for cash. If Lowry's out, I'd consider it a tournament one, but it does take a lot of the upside value away there. Whereas DeLon at 4,600, his ownership will be low. He can maintain value even if Lowry plays or if he doesn't play. I'm not thinking that he's a super strong play here, but he is a GPP type of an option. TJ McConnell at 4,400 had dipped before his last game where he had 32, not feeling super strongly about that either. Whereas Lowry at 8,200, his tailbone is not ideal. 8,200 is tournament worthy, but definitely nothing for cash there. At shooting guard, JJ Redick at 5,500, he's getting 30 most nights at the moment, which is pretty good at 5,500, so I feel okay about using him. While DeRozan at 9,200 had 51 in that game across the weekend, has got a decent record against Philadelphia. I think he's a decent enough cash play here, who should feel a level of confidence about him getting to a floor of, say, 40. Speaking of floors, Bob Covers is very, very low. He's at 5,600. He scored 6 points in the last game. He does have tournament upside for sure, but I'm not really interested in using him. CJ Miles, the Jedi OG Anunoby, no interest. At power forward, Šarić down to 5,700. I am in on that. I'm in on that totally. Cash for Šarić. Tournament upside as well. I think that's a great, great price to take advantage of. Serge Ibaka at 5,700 as well. I'd feel okay about using him in cash there. Not sure about the upside. While Benny Simmons at 8,500. A little bit tough to rely upon against the Raptors team, who is quite good defensively. Siakam at 3,700. Yeah, it'd have to be a blowout, or Ibaka would have to be out for me to really consider him. And of course, we don't know if it's going to be a blowout yet. At center, Poeltl's at 3,700. I actually like Jakob here as a GPP guy. They could go through some fouls trying to guard Joel Embiid. So Jakob could be in play, while Valanciunas is putting up numbers at an astonishing per-minute rate. Just does he get the minutes? That's the concern. 5,400 is a decent enough chunk where I would rule him out of cash, but I could consider him for tournaments, while Embiid at 10,500. I think that's almost that's cash fade for me. It's tournament. There's some tournament upside there in Joel at 10,500. We know he can drop 80s and 90s and has done a 90 already this season. But 10.5, I think, takes him out of cash, a cash opportunity. Let's go over to DraftKings now. There's no one who I really love in this game over on DraftKings. You could say Covington at 5,300 for tournaments. Embiid at 10.3 is also worth a look. Same with DeRozan at 9.1. And I could lean a little bit towards DeMar as a cash play there, but DeLon Wright's at 5,800. That's not appealing in the slightest. VanVleet at 44. If Lowry's out, sure, there's way more appeal in Freddie there at 4,400 than what there is over on FanDuel. And the same sort of thing applies to Poeltl at a $3,800 price. He can have some value against the Sixers team, who uses quite a big lineup most of the time. The next game, the Milwaukee Bucks and the Wizards. The Bucks on a back-to-back after getting their asses kicked pretty significantly today. The Wizards are favored by 5. The total is 214.5 points. Eric Bledsoe was the dud of the night. He's at 7,500. I have a fairly decent confidence level that he's going to bounce back. He's done quite well against his Kentucky compatriot. They played together, didn't they? I'm almost certain they shared the backcourt together in Kentucky. 7,500 for Bledsoe. I'm in on him here. I think that's a pretty decent spot to use Big Eric. As for Johnny, at 10,700, that's too high. It's just too high against a Bucks team who's been quite good defensively against opposition point guards. I don't want much to do with John at that sort of elevated salary. He's probably going to come under average on whatever site you're at as well. Shooting guard Chrissy Middleton down to 6,600 because his numbers have been suppressed, averaging only 28 over the last 5. There is some upside here for Chrissy, but I'm not really getting overly interested. While Brogo at 5,500, I feel like Brogdon at that price is strong for cash and probably a bit limited in terms of tournaments. Brattles Beals at 8,500 as a shooting guard, that's a very hefty price. He's producing. He's giving you 42 a game over the last 5. But at 8,500, I want a little bit more reliability in the floor. And I think that he could be used as a tournament guy, but I'm not feeling super good about that. Small forward Otto Porter, 6,600. I just don't love him for tournaments at all. But he's got for DFS in general. But 42 point average the last 3 times he has taken on the Bucks definitely piques my interest for tournaments. You can get 40, 45 out of Otto at that price. That would be great. So he is in my tournament pool. Oubre at 4,000. A decent game in the last one, even with Markieff Morris playing, but I'm not falling for that too much. While Yanni Antetokounmpo, 10,500, has really annihilated the Wizards in the past. 54-point average over the last 3 games. His numbers himself, though, are quite down recently. 35 over the last 3, 41 over the last 5, which isn't cutting it at 10,500, but for the tournaments, for the 55-point upside, 60-point upside, I think that Giannis is GPP worthy, but not a cash guy. Sorry, the Muppet John Henson is a power forward, still listed as a power forward. I don't know why. 5,100 for Henson, probably a little bit high, but there's been some big numbers come up against the Wizards for centers recently, so he is an interesting tournament guy who can block some shots and have some weird offensive outputs, while Markieff Morris at 4,600 is in the tournament zone, but really not strongly considering the Bucks are quite a big negative against power forwards. I actually like Marcin Gortat here at 5,800. I would like him more if he was just a little bit cheaper, but I think he's not a bad option here. 40 points in the last game. I think he's worth a look. I'd probably lean more tournament than cash, though. McCurr, Mahinmi, not really going to be troubling the scorers too much, I wouldn't have thought. On DraftKings, Gortat is more appealing at 5,400, so I'm in on him there. Bledsoe at 69.
Giggity!
And Beal at 8,200. They all have cash and tournament appeal. Yanni's at 10,200, so still that GPP option. Well, Johnny Wall is in a much sexier spot than FanDuel. But at 9,700, there's still an element of risk. But if I was going to use him in cash on one side, it would be on DraftKings rather than on FanDuel. Brogdon at 5,400 is a decent cash option with a little bit less appeal than what we'd see for him over on FanDuel. The next game up, we're going to be talking about the New York Knicks and the Brooklyn Nets. The Knicks coming off a back-to-back. Timmy Hardaway, as I said, suffered that marginal limp at the end of the game. I think there's a decent chance he doesn't play just because it's a back-to-back, playing 32 minutes in that first game back. So with him out, that does open up the ability for Michael Beasley to go big. For the Nets, Tyler Zeller missed the last game and Quincy Acey started in his place. Zeller has been upgraded to probable, so he will likely be back and likely starting again at point guard. Oh, D'Angelo Russell's out, by the way. At point guard, Jarrett Jack, 5,600, just crushing that recently. I'm in on that, weirdly enough. I think it tips the scales. He's playing against the Nets, so I'm in on Jarrett Jack at 5,600 here. Spencer Dinwiddie's at 6,400. He's got a positive matchup against the Knicks too, so he is a fine option to go with, while Frankie Ntilikina at 3,600, real tough. Shooting guard, Timmy Hardaway at 55. I'd be smashing that if we knew that he was going to play. At this point, I don't, so that's a fade. While LeVert at 5,500, I think has got some tournament upside, and I actually don't hate it for cash. Probably would fade in cash a lot of the time, but the matchup's a positive one. We've got no Russell coming back. I think 5,500 for Karras is reasonable. Courtney Lee's at 5,400. If Timmy Hardaway's out, I don't mind it for cash. If Hardaway's in, I'd probably leave him alone. And at small forward, Damari Carroll, 5,200. The numbers have been good for Carroll recently. I'm in on that for cash. I think that's a nice, solid 28, 29 point type of a guy at 5,200. The Blue Swimmer's at 46. We can't really trust him as a DFS producer. At power forward, Rondae Hollis-Jefferson as $7,000. He's been putting up numbers consistently. I'm not sure how this is going to go for him against Kristaps Porzingis. That could get a little bit ugly, but he's been okay against the Knicks in the past. I think he's more of a tournament guy and probably a guy to save for other spots, whereas Porzingis, 8,900, 55 in today's game, averaging 43 over his last five. I like this a lot against the Nets. We're talking about the 60-point upside here. I'm still not ready to go in on him at cash at that elevated price, but I do think that this is a really good spot for him to put up some big, big numbers. At center, Enes Kanter, 6,500. Big men against the Nets have had a field day this year. The salary going up is a little bit concerning for Kanter, but I still think that he can get you 35 here, and this should be another opportunity for him to get some minutes. While Kylo Quinn at 4,400, if Kanter doesn't, then maybe Cox the guy that gets it going. So he could be a GPP option, as he is on most days. The Nets centers, Jarrett Allen, Jahlil Okafor, Tyler Zeller. I don't really think there's much to see with those guys. On DraftKings, there's a bunch of guys I like for both tournaments and cash. Porzingis at 83, Kanter at 61, Hollis-Jefferson at 65, Jarrett Jack at 5,000 is super good, and LeVert at 5,300. I like all of those. Damari Carroll also at 52, but probably just a little bit less than those other guys I mentioned. Timmy Hardaway is a fade on DraftKings, I believe, or Dinwiddie at 66 just comes a bit under some of the other options that are out there. Let's move on to the next one now. We've got the San Antonio Spurs and the Atlanta Hawks. The Spurs are favored by 7.5 on the road. The total is 206 points. The Hawks got a bunch of guys probable. Mike Muscala, Marco Bellinelli, the artist formerly known as Taurean Prince, and the Undertaker, Dwayne Dedman, are all probable. At point guard, Dennis Schroeder, 7,500, just crushed at the last game, 54 points. But the Spurs' defense against point guards has consistently been a problem. It's a problem now, so that's probably the reason that I would fade Schroeder here. But I don't think that, you know, him getting 32 or 33 is not an outrageous proposition, which makes him a decent floor point guard. So consider him for cash just for that reason alone. Tone Parker, Pat Mills, DeJounte Murray, nothing too exciting there. Well, Malcolm Delaney's been getting some extra minutes, and if Marco Bellinelli does happen to be out with that ankle problem, Delaney at 4,000 is a GPP type of option, but not a high priority one. At shooting guard, Kent Bazemore at 5,200. I feel like for cash, that's almost as good as it's going to get. Yes, I know the matchup's not ideal, but I feel Baze is going to get you 26 pretty much straightforward. 4,400 for Dan Green. He is back, but I don't care. And small forward, formerly is at 5,400. I know he killed you in that last game, just 10 points in 27 minutes. But normally when he's had a shitful game, he's bounced back fairly strongly, so I do believe that he will. The problem we have here, of course, is the Kawhi Leonard, Danny Green defensive situation, and they can throw Kyle Anderson onto him. So that can be a problem, but Prince in a GPP has that 35-point upside, which is something I do like. As for Leonard, he is at 9,400. This guy is crushing it. Even in limited minutes, he had 47 in his first game back in just 28 minutes. That high price, though, makes me go just no way, not interested. At power forward, the Baptist, 4,300. Will they give John Collins minutes? That is the question. The last time they played the Spurs, he had 36 points in 36 minutes. Will he get those numbers back? That is really hard to say. But of course, if he plays 26 minutes, then he exceeds that value pretty comfortably. So he is a GPP consideration, but not a strong one. While LaMarcus Aldridge at 8,800 had just 25 in 27 minutes against the Nuggets. And the Kawhi presence makes me not want to spend that much on him. Ilyasova at 5,200. The numbers have been a little bit down for Ersan recently, but he's still averaging 26 across the last five. If it was a better matchup, I might consider him a cash option, but probably not here. Davis Bertans, big games recently. He's at 3,700, sure. In a GPP, no worries. At center, The Undertaker's at 5,000. If you want to go full revenge game, you can consider that here, but we don't know what sort of minutes he's going to be looking at. Looked spry in his second game back, 26 points in 23 minutes. If I'm going to go anywhere, it'd be tournaments though. Well, Powell at 5,900. I feel like Powell is in 33-point mode here, but it could be a blowout, and that could be a reason to limit him. Miles Plumlee continues to start because... yeah, cool. Because Miles Plumlee is starting. On DraftKings, Schroeder at 7,000. I love that. And I love Prince at 5,200 as well. Leonard and Aldridge are more reasonably priced, but they're still not coming in really strong with what I like in terms of value. And Bazemore and Deadman are worse options on DraftKings than on FanDuel. The Baptist at 4,500. We're still looking at that as an upside sort of a situation. Let's go on to the next one. We are talking about the Miami Heat and the Chicago Bulls. The Bulls are favored by one. Yeah. The total is 207. We saw Zach LaVine make his season debut and played quite well in limited minutes. Many players who have come back from long-term injury have played really well in limited minutes in their first games, and things start to get a little bit harder. So I'd expect a level of drop-off for LaVine in this one, but at least he is going to be playing, so that's a positive there. At point guard, Tyler Johnson's at 5,800. I'm not sure the upside's massive, but for cash, I do like the floor for him there. The Iron Shoulder's at 7,400. Point guards against the Bulls, man, it's been a shit show for the Bulls all season in terms of preventing DFS points there. So Dragic at 7,400 is absolutely in play, in my opinion. Then you got Chrissy Dunn, who's at $8,000. Now, Miami all season has been really tough for point guards to go up against. Dunn had 56 in LaVine's first game back, so that really didn't impact him. But at 8,000, I'm going to leave him to be a tournament guy because he can still give you good tournament value, you know, 6x value, 7x value, even at 8,000. But the floor, I think, is pretty low here, and that's why I'd be fading him. At shooting guard, the Duke, Wayne Ellington, 5,100. He is a tournament type of guy, and this is the sort of game that sets up beautifully for him to have a 35-pointer. Justin Holiday at 48 remains starting next to LaVine, but his usage will drop even further, so no bueno there. 4,300 for Zachy LaVine. He had 16 in that first game back in 19 minutes. That is a very, very cheap price for LaVine. I don't think you should exclude him from your tournaments. I don't think he's ready for cash, but he could have 28. He could have 30 and play 23 minutes. I'd be unlikely to do it if I was doing single entry, but it's something to consider at that very low price. At small forward, Joshy Richardson, 5,700. I love that for cash. I'm all aboard that. David Nwaba at 39. I'm the opposite of all aboard. While the Hammer, Denzel Valentine, and Justice Winslow, very little to see with those guys. At power forward, Jim Johnson, 5,400. He had 32 in the last game the Heat played. I think that this is a 30-point type situation, 35-pointer. Cash, tournaments, I'm about him. While Lauri Markkanen at 6,600. With Nikola Mirotic back, it's a little bit hard to trust him in cash. He's a tournament guy, whereas Mirotic at 6,200, I have very, very little interest in that. Same with Punch Bob Shiploke at 4,200, very little to see there. Olynyk the same, 4,700. His role has been usurped. At center, Robin Lopez, 4,500. Nothing sexy there. Hassan Whiteside, 7,700. This dude is averaging 41 points in 28 minutes in the last three. This is absolutely a tournament situation. Whereas Adebayo's at 4,600, and I don't really see him as being an awesome DFS option. Over on DraftKings, I like Dunn a lot more. 7,100, I'd consider that in cash. Markkanen at 63, I think he's worth a cash look as well with the different scoring. And Tyler Johnson at 5,000 is one of the better options of the day. Over on DraftKings, the Duke, Dwayne Ellington, 4,700 is a tournament option. Whiteside and Dragic, 75 and 7,200 respectively. I think Dragic is more of a GPP guy on DraftKings, whereas Whiteside, I'd probably lean more tournament too, but he can have some cash appeal, just it's a little bit limited. All right, we're getting through these games now. Next one we're going to take a look at is the, who is it? It's the Los Angeles Lakers and the Memphis Grizzlies. Brandon Ingram is listed as questionable. Lonzo Ball is also listed as questionable. I would say that Lonzo is on the doubtful side of questionable. And people have asked me this before. What do those tags mean, Josh? Well, if you're the Warriors, they mean jack shit. But they're supposed to mean probable is 75% chance likely to play, questionable is 50-50, and doubtful is 25% chance to play. Of course, if you're doubtful and then you play, well, that you've then fell in that 25%. If you're probable and you're out, you're in that 25% of likely not to play. So that's how they are. That's how they're officially designated. And yeah, but teams can obviously screw around with that as much as possible. As I said, Lonzo questionable. His MRI on his knee came up saying he's got a minor knee sprain. And what the Lakers have done is they've signed Gary Payton II, the Mitten, to a two-way deal. They've also recalled Alex Caruso from the South Bay Lakers, and both of those players will be in Memphis and available to play. So you don't sign another point guard and then recall a G League point guard and send them to Memphis if you are super confident that Ball is going to play. Now, he could play, but those signs make me think that he won't. Tyler Ennis would likely get the start. Jordy Clarkson may get a boost, but we saw prior that when Lonzo was out, he had like one game and then went back and played 20 minutes a night. I think you're going to see a little bit more from the hitman, Josh Hart, as well, if Lonzo happens to be out. And if Brandon Ingram's out, then the hitman becomes a massive, massive option who will play 35 to 36 minutes a night. We're also going to get a bit of Corey Brewer mixed in there, unfortunately. At point guard, Lonzo's at 8,000. We know he's been crushing it recently. The Memphis matchup is not an ideal one, and the injury concern on his knee, it's hard to use him in any situation. While Andy Harrison, FanDuel's gone, well, we saw Andy Harrison have one good game, so let's go at 5,700. And your response to that should be, cool, I will just leave him alone forever then. So not much to see with him. Tyler Ennis at minimum salary, absolutely a guy you put in your GPPs, even if you haven't heard about Lonzo, because on the off chance that it breaks and he is in, a minimum salary point guard whose ownership should be lower in your multi-entries is a real, real option here. He's had some 20-point games. Now, he had a 40-point game earlier on this season, so there is some upside there for Ennis. KCP's at 5,400. I don't feel anything about him in cash, but if Ingram's out, if Ball is out, at 5,400, that would pique my interest. While Tyreek's at 8,300, a little bit down the last couple for Tyreek, but I still think he's worthy of a tournament type of a look. Clarko's at 4,100 because he had been putrid up until the last game, but of course at 4,100, I think you should consider him as a tournament guy, and the hitman is minimum as well, and he would become a tournament option if we assume that Ingram or Lonzo or both could be out. There's some significant value for those guys. At small forward, Ingram's at 6,400. I'd actually like that if he plays, but we don't know at this point. Parsons, Brooks, Ennis, no. Power forward, Jermichael Green, 4,900. No. Jarrell Martin, whose minutes and level of play has just really dissipated. He had 0.4 points in 20 minutes in the last game. Nothing to see for those guys. Whereas the future MVP, Kyle Kuzma, at 5,700. The mojo's starting to come back a little bit. I think at 5,700, he's a pretty good cash option. Larry Nance at 49, big game, and then copped that abrasion in his eye in the last one. Very little for me to get excited about. At center, Julius Randle, 6,300. That's a strong fade for me going up against Marc Gasol, whereas Gasol at 8,700, I hate that it's at 87. 82, and I'd be all about it, but at 87, it's probably just a little bit too high for Marky. The DraftKings situation is not a huge amount that I'm really loving over there for this one. Maybe you could consider Kuzma. He'd be an option. And of course, we're looking at guys like Ennis and Jordy Clarkson if Lonzo happens to be out. Let's go on to the next game. It's the Golden State Warriors. We've got the Cleveland Cavaliers. The Warriors favored by 5 in Cleveland. The total is an absolutely massive 231. Dwayne Wade and Isaiah Thomas both rested in the last game. I am sure that they will be back for this one. Whereas for the Warriors, Shawnee Livingston, Andre Iguodala, and Omri Caspi are all listed as probable. I think you'd have to assume that one of those guys sits out just based on the fact that the Warriors, pretty much every time someone's probable, at least one of those guys sits out. I base it on nothing apart from past history in terms of their listing of players. But it's not going to have a massive impact on us DFS-wise anyway. At point guard, we've got Steph. He is at 10,200. He is getting you 50 almost every night. The Isaiah Thomas defense is not going to be something that restricts him massively. So I think he's a pretty strong play here. I'm not really interested in Isaiah, even though he is at 5,500. I just don't know if the minutes are going to be then. He could get absolutely cooked by Steph. That could be a problem. Shooting guard, Clay's at 6,700. I just don't. He's just not a guy that reaches value often enough for me to care about. Dwayne Wade at 48, J.R. Smith the plumber 36, and Kyle Korver at minimum. Kyle Korver at minimum, he'd be an interesting tournament guy, but that's about it. At small forward, Durant's at 10,700. I like Durant here. I think he is a strong tournament option, and he does have some cash appeal, whereas LeBron James at 11,400, give me Durant every day of the week. I know LeBron had that big 60-pointer in his last game, I believe against the Pacers that was. Maybe it wasn't the Pacers. But 10-7 for Durant would be the direction that I would head there. Iggy's at 3,700, and that's a no from me. At power forward, Draymond at 8-2. I like Draymond here. I think this is a 40-point territory for him. He's done very well against Cleveland in the past. I'm all about Draymond at 8,200 as an expensive guy. Then you've got Jeff Green, Dave West, Jay Crowder, Kevon Looney. And Looney, for some reason, has taken Jordan Bell's minutes in the rotation. I have no idea why that's the case, but that is what's happening. At center, Kevin Love, $7,000. That would be tournaments only. He has a habit of getting played off the floor against the Cavs, against the Warriors. So let's see what Ty Lue does and whether we get more Tristan Thompson. And even if we get more Tristan Thompson, he's at $3,900. It'd be a real miracle to see him break through 20 points. It's possible, but I wouldn't be putting huge amounts on that. Well, Zaza's a minimum salary guy, and that is for a very specific reason, and that reason is that he's not good. On DraftKings, I love Kevin Durant here. 9,800, that is the high-priced guy I think you should start your DraftKings lineups with. LeBron at 11-1, give me Durant over him comfortably, and Steph at 10-2. And Steph at 10-2 is a really good play too, but Durant at under 10,000 is really tough to pass. Draymond at 77 is interesting, but not a must-roster sort of a player. Let's go on to these last three games now, get you ready for your Martin Luther King Day holiday. The Sacramento Kings and the Oklahoma City Thunder. The Thunder are favored by 11.5. The total is 210.5. Dave Yeager must be killing himself because he has started the same starting lineup for two consecutive games. So you know he's got to be feeling pretty nervous, pretty itchy on the old trigger finger here. So let's wait for any sort of random shit to happen. Can we get a Yordanis Papayannis start out of nowhere? That's what I'm pulling for. Let's see how it goes. Point guards, Russ, 12,200, that is super tough. That is no way that I want to deal with that in cash on an 11-game slate. It's too expensive. I know the Kings are terrible, but 12-2, like, what has Russ got to give me, 65? It's pretty bloody hard. Now, he can easily give you a 70 in tournaments, and that's fine. You can find your cheap guys around it, but I hate that for cash. Not interested at all in him. Georgie Hill's at 46. The dicking around of the minutes makes him a tournament sort of a guy. Fatface Ray Felton at 36. And De'Aaron Fox, man, that's pretty expensive for Foxy. 6,300. I know he had 35 in the last game. He's averaging 30 over the last five. I just don't feel super strongly about using him in cash, and the tournament upside's probably a little bit low. Budrick Hield, 4,300. He is averaging under 20 over the last five. Maybe in a tournament, maybe. Bogdan's at 54. I like that for cash. That's, you know, 27 for Bogdan feels about, yeah, a floor type number with 33, 34 point upside. So I like Bogdan for cash at 54. Terry Ferguson will start again, most likely, with Robertson out, but he has been a decent level of putrid lately, Terrence Ferguson. At small forward, Paulie George, 8,300. I'm in on that. I think there is value there for him against the Kings. And then you got the power forward. Zebo's at 4,900. The production, the minutes are rolling way back for Randolph, so I don't care for him here at all. Mallow's at 65, and that's a pass. LeBissiere at 44. I think there's some upside there for Scal at 4,400. The minutes have been over 20 recently. He had 30 points in his last game, but definitely not consider him for cash. Whereas center, Steve-O Adams, $7,000. I think he can get it done against the Kings. If it was another matchup, I don't think I'd be super keen, but against the Kings, I'm all aboard using him. Or Costa Kufos at 4,000 has had some okay games lately, but I'm not feeling great. I will call this on the other guy. 6,300, that's a tournament option, but the Thunder are a team who is quite strong against opposition centers. On DraftKings, it's a different story. Paulie George at 74 is strong. Steve-O Adams at 62 and Russ at 11.5. You can use all of those in cash and in tournaments. Corley Stein at 57 is also a really good option despite the negativity of the matchup. And Bogdan at 52 is also a one I like. I love De'Aaron Fox here too. 4,900. Much better than that 6,300 monstrosity we're seeing over at FanDuel. So a good price point there for De'Aaron Foxy Fox. Let's go on to the next one. It's the Indiana Pacers. They are taking on the Utah Jazz. Miles Turner has been ruled out already. Hull Neto for the Jazz. We don't know if he's going to play. We haven't seen him in a long time. And Thabo Sefolosha is out for the season with that MCL issue. At point guard, Daz Collison, limited minutes in today's game due to the blowout. 5,300. I feel like that's pretty fine for cash for Dazza, to be honest. Get your 26 or 27. And then you got Corey Joseph at 41, who had a big game today, but I don't really read too much into that. Ravishing Rick Rubio at 5,100. The minutes have been more solid recently, but the production's still not there. In a tournament, there's 30-point upside here. So definitely not my number one guy that I'm looking at. Vic Oladipo, 9,300. Probably a little bit high. tournament sort of guy, but that's probably pushing it. Whereas Rocket Rodney Hood's at 46, had an ankle problem in the last game, but played through it. He's as ice cold as they come. He is a tournament sort of a guy always, but not a cash guy. Whereas the Don Mitchell, 7,400 for the Don. The numbers for him have been okay recently, a 35 point. I feel pretty good about his floor for cash. So he's a strongish cash guy. Small forward Jingle and Joe, 5,000. That's a fade. Lance Stevenson, 51. Yeah, maybe. Joe Johnson at 43. Should get a bit of a boost with Tarbo out, but has put together a couple of nice games, but nothing consistently good enough. At power forward, Thaddeus Young, 5,800 for Thad. Hasn't really stepped it up that much with Miles Turner out. Only at 18 today in the blowout against whoever they played, which is completely escaping my mind at the moment. They killed whoever they played, and I don't remember who it was. Unfortunately, my brain has gone blank. 5,800 there for Thad. Yeah, it's okay, but it's very far from exciting. While Derek Favors at 6,300, I think that's a tournament play for a 36-37 point upside, but I don't feel super good about that for cash. At center, Udo at 4,800, he goes back to the minimal role with Favors around. Al Jefferson at 3,700, actually really outperformed that in today's game, putting up those 26 points in 19... Oh, they played the Suns, that's who they played, in 19 minutes. Hard to see him repeating that against the Jazz. No Rudy Gobert, who's out for at least one more week. Over on DraftKings, I like Don Mitchell, 7,100, that's super good. 86 for Victor Oladipo is pretty strong, but not as favorable. Domantas Sabonis, who's probably a little bit too highly priced at 6,400, despite the fact that he is starting, and Derek Favors at 6,000 is not a bad cash option on your DraftKings as well. This is the last game of the day, of the night. It is the Houston Rockets and the LA Clippers. DeAndre Jordan is listed as questionable, while Luke Marmute is likely to return for the Rockets. Jim Harden could also be back at some point this week, not in this game, but he could be back at the end of this week. So that is very, very interesting news to see Harden back so far ahead of schedule. We've also got Tariq Black, who is questionable with a right eye abrasion. For the Clippers, as I said, DeAndre Jordan is questionable. Point guard Milos, 4,800. I worry about the minutes, the worry about the defense of Chris Paul. That is a fade. And of course, this is Chris Paul returning to Staples Center. So yeah, factor that in as much as you want. He is at 10,800 here, Paul. So that is an extraordinarily high price. To me, it's not a cash option, but it is a tournament one. But that is a very, very high price. Juwan Evans at 4,300 with Milos back. A little bit tough to get on board with him. At shooting guard, Ty Wallace, 4,200, the list manager. He has put together some okay performances. He's been starting at small forward, CJ Williams and the Rooster out. At 4,200, absolutely in the tournament mix, but I don't feel strongly for him in cash. Well, Lou Williams is at 9,100 now. I think that Lou's floor is strong enough to use in cash at that price, and he's got a ridiculous upside as well, so I do like him. While Eric Gordon at 7,600, I also think that is a pretty good cash play. At small forward, Gerald Green, 4,600. There is the specter of Luke Marmute being around, and that might impact Green a bit. So he'd be a tournament sort of guy, and his numbers have cooled quite a bit recently. While Ariza at 5,500 is probably out of action with Marmute around. Wes Johnson at 3,900. Nothing for me. PJ Tucker, Sammy Decker, no. At power forward, Blake, 8,600 for Griffo. Tournament only. I don't feel super good about him being used here in cash. Marmute's minimum revenge game for him. Ryan Anderson at 4,500. I think that Rhino on the road is always better. Low salary. And if Tariq Black is out, I think Anderson would be a very intriguing GPP guy. If we have Tariq out, if we have DeAndre out, then I think Ryan Anderson becomes... It could almost become cash. And that, I can't believe that word's coming out of my mouth. But a couple of scenarios have to exist for that to happen. And they're both possibilities. The table, Montrezl Harrell, 5,400. He would be definitely in play if DeAndre is out. Speaking of DeAndre being out, 4,300 for Will Reed. He would be an absolute cash lock if we get that news early. The problem is the Clippers don't normally release that information until 8:30 Eastern, 5:30 Pacific, which is well after games lock. So we're not going to hear news of that most likely. But Will Reed in your tournaments could be a real boon when we turn that around. DeAndre at 8,800 would be a little bit too expensive, I believe. Or Clint Capela at 78. actually like this for Clint. I think there's not really cashable, but more of a tournament. But I do like that, especially if Tariq Black is out. On DraftKings, Chrissy Paul, 10,300. That's feels pretty good. And most of the other stuff that I mentioned for FanDuel will apply on DraftKings. Ty Wallace as your tournament guy. The same story for Ryan Anderson. Montrezl Harrell, Will Reed. We know where their value goes. Eric Gordon's an okay cash guy, as is Lou Williams at 8,900. DraftStars contests are all over the place. I'm not going to have prices for them. And at this point, the Yahoo prices, I don't have them updated. So it's just going to be some Moneyball stuff now. And for tournaments, it's Russ Westbrook, Andre Drummond, Kristaps Porzingis, The Don, Derek Favors, Caris LeVert, formerly Avery Bradley, JJ Redick, The Duke, Andy Harrison, Ty, the list manager Wallace, Scal Labissiere. And for cash, it's Marvin Williams, Damari Carroll, Kyle Kuzma, Marcin Gortat, Jimmy Johnson, Josh Richardson, Tyler Johnson, Jarrett Jack, Julius Randle, Spencer Dinwiddie, Enes Kanter, Stephen Adams, Goran Dragic, Dennis Schroeder, Draymond Green, Paulie George rounds it out. There's a bunch of other more expensive guys on Moneyball as well, which if you're going to take one of them, it's probably going to be Chris Paul at 10-8 or Durant at 10-6. We're done. If you do like this podcast, and why wouldn't you? Let's be honest. Go and leave a 5-star review. Of course, I'm being sarcastic. Go leave a 5-star review over on Apple Podcasts. You can also find this podcast on Google Play, on TuneIn, on Stitcher, and on Spotify, and on YouTube, where you can subscribe, give a thumbs up, and leave a comment. And make sure you're checking out the rest of the Locked On Podcast Network. Follow us on Twitter at LockedOnNBAnet, and you can find out when the next episode of your favorite team podcasts comes out. Check me out on basketballmonster.com. Follow me on Twitter. I am Josh Lloyd, the lead fantasy analyst at Basketball Monster. My Twitter handle is at redrock_beeble. Enjoy Martin Luther King Day. I'm sure there's a special significance for plenty of you over there in the States. Enjoy a full day of basketball starting very early in the day. We are done here, guys. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya. Alfred Payton.